Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to our programme. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the quiet despair of refugees fleeing the intense fighting in South Sudan.
The situation we are in South Sudan right now is really affecting us.
Our leaders, they are now dividing. I don't see any immediate solution can be done in this moment.
And in an election year, South Africans mull over their country's problems, including its high crime rate.
If I was also starving and I couldn't get food, I'd also be out there robbing, breaking in. It's frightening. I actually feel sorry and worried for all of those people.
We also hear about protests in Israel and a presidential election in Puntland.
Top story.
In South Sudan, fierce fighting between government forces and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar continued across the country on Wednesday. Military officials from both sides said that a major battle for control of Bor, capital of Jonglei State and situated just north of the capital Juba, was still raging. Fighting was also taking place in the oil-producing Upper Nile State, while the rebels said more troops previously based in Juba had defected from the government side and could launch an assault on the capital. The rebels also claim that several of their positions have been bombed by Ugandan aircraft. In a moment, we'll be hearing from Addis Ababa about the peace talks. But first, we go to our correspondent James Shimanyula, who reports that the humanitarian situation is worsening.
This is how the escalating humanitarian situation was summed up by Tommy Lancer, the United Nations humanitarian coordinator in the troubled new nation.
We are now faced with one of the largest emerging humanitarian crises, which comes on top of what was already a large humanitarian program here in South Sudan. I am calling on the international donor community to make sure that they make every effort to ensure that non-governmental organizations and UN agencies have medicines, water and sanitation equipment, blankets and shelter, as well as food, to ensure that we can meet the most basic and urgent life-saving needs of what is quickly evolving to affect not tens of thousands of people, but I expect hundreds of thousands of people.
The plight of people fleeing their homes to take refuge either at the UN camps or in neighboring countries is reflected in voices of these three women buried in depths of sadness and despair.
My name is Atho Elizabeth. The situation we are in South Sudan right now is really affecting us.
My name is Mary Awash. The security situation in the country, I think, is going to be worse because our leaders, they are now dividing. I don't see any immediate solution can be done in this moment.
Everyone is scared now. You can't sleep well or even eat or settle comfortably like a human being. We want this war to end.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, which is working in tandem with the other humanitarian organizations, also emphasized on the challenging task they face in providing shelter and security for those displaced by the violence. Melissa Fleming is the UNHCR spokesperson.
The situation inside the country continues to be very unstable. UNHCR is now stepping up efforts to get relief items, to help people with shelter, with cooking pots, kitchen equipment, etc.
Meanwhile, peace talks between delegates from President Salva Kiir's government and those from rebels loyal to Riek Machar continued on Wednesday in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, but the talks, which have yielded no breakthrough so far, were gripped by claims of one of Machar's representatives who told the Associated Press Uganda was bombarding rebel strongholds. His statement was supported by Tabande Ngai, also attending the talks.
We have a concern that a member country of IGAD, Uganda, have decided to invade my country. This is a concern that we have to voice because we are very much concerned about peace We believe involvement of Uganda in my country is going to complicate peace to us as people of South Sudan.
Uganda has acknowledged that its troops are in South Sudan to oversee the safe evacuation of its citizens stranded there, but strongly denies helping the country's forces to fight Riek Machar's rebels. Nevertheless, the leader of South Sudan's delegation at the talks, Michael Makuei, is still optimistic that the talks will bear fruit.
We have come for peace and we'll go back to our people with peace. From here, I hope that we will be in a position to stop displacement and all the atrocities that are happening today in South Sudan.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula. Meanwhile, those peace talks to which James referred to between the two sides at the Sheraton Hotel in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa do not appear to be making much headway. The main reason seems to be the government's refusal to release political detainees loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. Johannes Puch is a spokesman for the delegation supporting Machar.
You cannot go to negotiation while there are some people are in detain. If you need to have a conducive environment, you need to release them so that they now have a positive role in the negotiation.
Johannes Puch talking there to our reporter Benno Mushler at the hotel venue of the talks. I then asked Benno whether there was any sense of urgency accompanying the negotiations, bearing in mind the heavy fighting that was going on in South Sudan.
Honestly speaking, it doesn't look like that. Of course, both sides, they say that they are interested in a verbal decision here in Addis Ababa. However, I think like yesterday or the day before, the mediators from the IGAD, the regional cooperation that is like mediating the talks here in Addis Ababa, went to Juba. And I was told this morning from one of the spokesmen of the opposition side that negotiations would only continue the moment those mediators come back, and they're expected to arrive today. But no, I mean, there's no like urgency. It doesn't look like that that they're like pressed to come to an agreement here as quick as possible.
So has anything tangible emerged from these talks that might bring peace in South Sudan any closer?
What happened yesterday and the day before is that both parties like finally agreed on an agenda, and now they are still mediating, and they said like they want to continue meet face to face. They say like they're getting closer to a ceasefire. That's what they want to do, but not like tangible like decision making took place here in Addis so far.
What are the sticking points? What is impeding progress?
I think the biggest problem for the opposition is the spokesman I talked to this morning. His name is Johannes Puch. He said, like, they came here to Addis Ababa a week ago under the condition that the government will finally release those opposition members that were jailed during the days of the alleged coup in December. That hasn't happened so far, and I think this is a major point for the opposition to not agree on the ceasefire that, of course, the government wants to reach. And I think, well, the rebel spokesman, he didn't say that it is still a condition, but I think an underlying condition is really the question of power sharing. President Salva Kiir does not want to share his power again with the former Vice President Riek Machar. And of course, Riek Machar wants to come back to power. I think those are the two points. Like one, a release of the rebels, immediate release of the rebels, and then like power sharing, yes or no.
Why is the government unwilling to release those detainees?
The government, they stick to their point. We only came to Addis Ababa if there are no conditions, no conditions from the opposition side. We will talk freely. We don't release the opposition members until we reach a ceasefire. That is the stance of the government.
What can you tell us about the structure of the negotiations? How many people are taking part and who is taking part?
The number is a bit unclear. I mean, there, if you go to the Sheraton Hotel where the talks take place, you will quickly meet a huge number of South Sudanese-looking people. I mean, both delegations, I think it's fair to say that they arrived here with about 20 members each, and those both delegations brought their families with them. So I think we talk about at least about 100 individuals here in Addis Ababa. The structure of the talks, there is that regional cooperation called IGAD, in the Horn of Africa, that is mediating the talks. And at the beginning, it happened like this, that like the IGAD mediators, there are four of them, met individually with the two delegations. and then, as their position says, mediated between those two groups before the groups met face-to-face for a first time. Now what happens, both sides meet face-to-face, though there is a direct debate taking place between the two of them.
Benno Mischler in Addis Ababa.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
January the 8th is a red letter day for South Africa's ruling party, the ANC. It was on that day, back in 1912, that the organisation was founded. This anniversary is also significant for another reason. It comes at the start of a year when South Africa will be marking 20 years of non-racial democracy and the end of apartheid. But with elections looming earlier this year, the ANC is not just mulling over the past, it is keen to be seen looking to the future as well. So Brig Avender reports.
Highlighting achievements of South Africa's democracy over the past 20 years, President Jacob Zuma and other top ANC leaders have said that the liberation movement is the only political party the people should elect again in the coming elections. The achievements include the strongest economy on the African continent, despite the shortcomings to create sufficient job opportunities, especially for the youth, a strong and independent judiciary, a fearless media, and vibrant institutions such as the Public Protector and the Auditor General. The party leaders say their emphasis over the next 5 years will be economic growth, rural development, education, health, and safety and security. Gwede Mantashe is the Secretary General of the ruling ANC.
On the 5 priority areas we selected in 2009. We'll put emphasis more on the areas where they were difficult. I would imagine that the jobs and the economy will be a major focus. There will be a major emphasis on job and the economy, particularly youth employment.
But many South Africans are doubting whether these goals could be reached in the next 5 years or even 10 years.
Having attained democracy or political freedom, then the big task now or for the next 20, or well, you know, now going forward is that sort of we need to concentrate on the economic empowerment. We need to make sure that everybody, including the private sector, civil society, business, et cetera, everybody should be involved in ensuring that we fight the scourge of poverty.
There's just not enough job creativity and opportunity for them. And what's that going to do? It's going to create unrest. And that unrest, if I was also starving and I couldn't get food, I'd also be out there robbing, breaking in. It's frightening. I actually feel sorry and worried for all of those people. And if we can do something to help them, that's where I'd like to see government put its efforts.
Seriously concerned about the future, not only because I'm white, but I'm concerned for a lot of people. I'm concerned about everybody, and nothing gets done about it. The situation of crime in this country is absolutely horrendous and ridiculous.
Trade union organizations and other political movements, some allies of the ruling ANC, have also emphasized that drastic measures must be taken to overcome the deep economic inequalities that currently exist in the country. Solly Mapela is a leader of the South African Communist Party.
That they should remain focused to the revolutionary mandate to fully liberate our people from economic bondage as we enter the second phase of our transition. This process should actually be anchored around renewing our own values of selflessness, of sacrifice, of loyalty to our people. And
an independent political observer, Robert Whiteford, says he expected the ANC, which he believed will be returned to power after the April elections, to be more vigilant in protecting the country's hard-won democracy.
I'm not concerned about the future, but I think certain things need to be changed, like if the president has been involved in some of these things, he must step down, somebody else come in his position, and we must march forward, because the rest of the world look at what is happening here. And personally, I think they're concerned with the way the president is running things.
While the ANC is lauding itself on its 102nd birthday and on the 20th anniversary of democracy, it has to be on guard that a significant percentage of people are concerned about many aspects of life, especially corruption and deterioration of services in areas such as health, safety and security, and education.
So Brig Avender reporting.
Behind the Headlines.
More than 10,000 African asylum seekers rallied outside Israel's parliament, the Knesset, in Jerusalem on Wednesday in a fourth straight day of protests against Israeli immigration policy. Under legislation passed last month, the authorities can detain illegal immigrants entering Israel for up to a year without trial. Most of them come from Sudan or Eritrea, and they say they are fleeing conflict and persecution and need the protection of refugee status. Israel says they are largely economic migrants in search of work. Iris Makler in Jerusalem takes us behind the headlines.
We are refugees, chant thousands of African asylum seekers in the Rose Garden near Israel's parliament in Jerusalem Wednesday. They're here to protest against the Israeli government's policy of detaining them without charge and its refusal to recognise them as refugees. It's estimated there are between 50 and 60,000 African asylum seekers who've entered Israel illegally across its border with Egypt. Less than 2,000 of their claims are being processed. Not one of them has been granted refugee status. Moussa Abdelhaye is a 30-year-old asylum seeker from the Central African Republic. After escaping the political turmoil there, he endured a five-month trek through Chad, Sudan, and then Egypt before reaching Israel in 2008.
I am here today to protest and to send our direct message to the Member of Parliament, to the government of Israel, also to the Prime Minister, to come and see this crowd and talk to them and try to make a dialogue with them and try to find a solution to give them a protection that they deserve.
Famous Israeli author David Grossman was one of those who addressed the crowd outside Israel's parliament.
I look at you now, all the tens of thousands of people, I feel embarrassed and ashamed even that we have reached this situation. Israel has not created this problem, but there is a problem now, and we have to struggle with it and to solve it in the most humane way. You here, you are not criminals. We are ordinary human beings who are trapped in an unordinary situation.
But few Israelis are so sympathetic. While the Africans call themselves refugees, the Israeli government calls them infiltrators or economic migrants. Over the past 2 years, Israel has been building a fence across its border with Egypt, which has more or less halted the entry of asylum seekers. On Tuesday, Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, reiterated his opposition to their demands.
I want to make clear that these demonstrations and strikes won't help them. Just as we managed to stop the illegal infiltration of our borders, so we are also determined to remove from here those who succeeded in entering before we closed the border. I want to make clear that these aren't refugees who we treat according to international norms. These are illegal infiltrators seeking work, and we are determined to bring them to justice.
One of their concerns is the religion of many of the asylum seekers, who are Muslims, a complicating factor in the Jewish state. But to Moussa Abdelhaye, that's not relevant.
Personally, I don't think, because this is my personal relation with God. It has nothing to do with anyone else.
As well as an end to detention without trial, the protesters are demanding rights such as healthcare and education and permission to work legally. It remains to be seen if these historic protests will have any effect on Israeli policy.
Iris Makler reporting from Jerusalem. Puntland, the semi-autonomous region of Somalia, has a new president. He is Abdiwale Mohamed Ali, and he takes over from President Abdurrahman Mohamed Farouli. The new leader was elected by the narrowest of margins by lawmakers, who were in turn appointed by clan elders last month. With a look at the election and what it means for Puntland and the region, here's Crispin Mwakideo.
Abdiwale Mohamed Ali won the election against outgoing leader Abdurrahman Sheikh Mohamed Farouli by 33 votes to 32 in the third round of a runoff on Wednesday. Ali, a former prime minister for Somalia and an economist, said after the vote, "I promise progress and peace for Puntland in the coming 5 years. Let's all work together in improving the security and development." During the campaign, Ali accused his main rival of corruption and failing to curb insecurity. Farole has denied the allegations. But at the tip of the Horn of Africa and with a third of Somalia's population of about 10 million, semi-autonomous Puntland largely escaped the worst of the country's upheaval at the last 20 years. Somalia's central government and foreign powers advocating a loose federal political system in Somalia have held Puntland up as a possible model, having avoided the worst of a seven-year insurgency fought by militants seeking to impose a strict interpretation of Sharia law. But acts of violence have risen, the latest of which was in Bosaso in early December, when seven people were killed in a car bomb attack on an armed convoy escorting foreigners. The foreign nationals were engaged in security training.
Crispin Wakideo. Now let's hear from Awes Yusuf, a journalist from Shabelle News. He's based in Mogadishu. I asked him if the election of a new president would help stabilize Puntland.
Yes, the new president may perhaps stabilize Puntland because this man, he was in a political title for many years. He was the former prime minister of the Somali Transitional Federal Government. So people and all in Somalia, they expect that he may perhaps stabilize and somehow many problems that is existing by now.
Do you expect relations with Mogadishu to change?
As many people think that perhaps since he was a prime minister of this the federal government and he knows many problems related to this region, this may help to stabilize many problems. The federal government has already congratulated for him to be in the office.
What are the chief problems facing the new president? Security, presumably?
Security is the primary when we are talking of Somalia. Security is the primary because things might not go as people plan it if there is no security. So the first thing for every elected man to take on his account, security as a priority.
Apart from security, what are the other problems facing the new president?
Is the resources. Sharing the resources among the Somali people as well as the state and to the federal. That is the second thing that will face him.
Awes Yusuf in Mogadishu.
Opinion.
And this week, we'd like to hear your opinion on our story from Israel about African asylum seekers. Thousands of them have been protesting against Israel's immigration policy. Now, these demonstrations have confronted Israel with key questions about its identity. Who is a refugee? And are Israelis under a special obligation to help others? What do you think? Let us know your thoughts in a text message to 491609575950 or in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And if you want to hear what other listeners are thinking, then don't forget to tune in to Friday's edition of Africa Link for your say. Back now to this programme and a reminder of our main stories. Fighting is raging across South Sudan. Peace talks in Addis Ababa appear to have stalled over the release of political detainees. Thousands of African asylum seekers have been protesting for a fourth day in Israel against the country's immigration policy. We've also been hearing from South Africa about the challenges facing the ANC in this election year. And there we end this edition of Africa Link. Isaac Mugabe will be here tomorrow, and I do hope you'll be able to join him. Until the next time, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.